You're listening to filmmusicsite.com. This is Composer Talk. Hi everybody, welcome to a new Composer Talk. My name is Tim Hormans and I'm your host here at www.filmmusicsite.com. Today I'm talking to composer Craig Saffin. He's a composer of film music who is born in Los Angeles. At the young age of 5, he began picking out tunes. He studied the piano and he can also play the classical violin. He has written scores to films such as The Last Starfighter, Mr. Wrong, Stand and Deliver, Major Payne and Remo Williams. He has written music for episodes from TV series such as The Twilight Zone and The Amazing Stories and all the episodes of the popular sitcom Cheers. In 2014, it was the 30th anniversary of his score to The Last Starfighter. Now, Mr. Saffin, you've studied fine arts in Boston, wanting to become an architect. What happened that you changed your mind and finally chose to write music, and especially music for film?
Well, I always was playing piano and improvising from like the age of 6, writing songs, playing in bands. I was also always an artist. I could paint and draw, and I decided to become a fine arts major, mainly because my parents thought going into music was ridiculous and I would never be able to make a living, never have a stable life, become a drug addict, all that kind of stuff. But to them, if I said I was an art major, that I was going to become an architect, that was somewhat respectable to them. So I think it was just a way to get through those years, and as my years in college progressed, it became clearer and clearer that I was really going to end up as a composer. I never thought of film music because at that time when I was in college, I had no awareness that that was even a career. Mm-hmm. There were no schools like now where you could go to Berkeley in Boston or in any, or take film music at USC or even at UCLA. There were no classes in film music. There were no classes in MIDI or any of that. So I sort of fell into film music after being involved with songwriting and arranging record albums here in Los Angeles. I accidentally fell into actually the actual career of film music.
Now, can you remember what your first experience was with film music?
Mine, yes. I was a struggling musician, barely able to pay my rent, and I got a call from an old friend who I had known at college, and we had done a bunch of original musicals, theatrical musicals. And she called me. She said, I just got into Los Angeles. I'm now married. And my husband is about to go to AFI, America Film Institute. He's made a little film, a horror film on Super 16 millimeter. And you're the only person I know in Los Angeles who knows music. So do you know who we could get to put music to our film? And I, within 1 second, I said, well, I'll do it. Uh-huh. And that was the beginning. And it turned out that director's name was John McTiernan. And he had not even done a film yet. I had never done a film yet. And mm-hmm. I guess it was the beginning of both of our careers.
Okay. Now, in 1982, you began working on the popular sitcom Cheers. You wrote music for 271 episodes. Can you tell us something about that period in your life?
Yes, well, Cheers had very little music in it. The music was mostly little establishing shots and connectors, and it was played by a small band. I played piano on it. I wanted it to sound like you were in a bar at 2 a.m. and some people started playing music, and they weren't really very good. And they were sort of lazy, and the clarinet player had played a little bit, but not very much. Mm-hmm. So it had sort of that feel to it. In terms of my involvement, because there was so little music, it it never got in the way of my film career. I would be doing features, feature films or miniseries, and still continue to do the episodes of Cheers. About half of them were library music that I did. So at the beginning of every season, I would put together a whole library of Cheers music that they could cut into the film. And then about half the episodes, they would call me up and say, Craig, do you want to score a few episodes? And I would write it in the night before, go in the studio the next morning and do three episodes. So it was a almost like a side job. And at the time, none of us knew that it would become this iconic American television show.
Now, besides Cheers, you've worked on other popular TV shows such as The
Yes.
Twilight Zone and The Amazing Stories. Now, both series with that a different story for every episode, and
Right.
for which you had also a bigger orchestra to work with. Now, how did you approach these episodes musically? Did you treat them as kind of short films?
Yes, exactly. They were very much short films, especially Amazing Stories, because Amazing Stories, because it was produced by Spielberg, they very much wanted that classical romantic orchestral feeling. Twilight Zone was a little more open. I also did a few episodes of Hitchcock Presents, and they were more open to more experimental music. So I used much more electronics and clavier. One of them, I think I did using all children's toys that I had sampled and made into a little orchestra of plastic toys. But each one I approached like a little film, trying to find the proper voice, the palette for that particular episode. And they were like little films because, as you said, it was an anthology series. So it wasn't like Cheers that you had a cast and you followed these people's lives. Everyone was separate. And also, they were all separate directors.
Now, how big was the orchestra you could use for this show?
Oh, I think for Amazing Stories, it was about 35 people. Sort of a nice size orchestra for that kind of thing. It's not as big as Last Starfighter, where we had like 90 people, but you can do a lot with 30, 35 people. You can get a lot of noise out of that, believe me.
And did you got a lot of time to write the scores for these episodes?
No, usually you'd get maybe a couple of weeks. It was
Okay.
quick. It
All
was
right.
quick and in and out, because they were doing episodes every week. So it was quite most television is on a very quick schedule, which is good and bad. It's good in that the producers can't take too much time worrying about what you're doing and ruin it. But it's bad in that you don't have that much time to really accomplish it. So, but it works both ways.
Okay, now in 1984, you wrote a score to The Last Starfighter, a movie directed by Nick Castle. Now, last year it was 30 years ago, it was the 30th anniversary for that score. Can you remember how you got the assignment for that film?
Yes, I had done a film a few years before that called Tag, The Assassination Game. And that was directed by the same director, Nick Castle. Nick's producer was somehow friends with Elmer Bernstein, and they had wanted Elmer to do it. Elmer didn't really want to do it. He was busy, and he was a friend of mine and a mentor, and we had the same agent. And so he very kindly suggested that I would be a much better choice. And that's how I got in that movie. And it went very well. Nick and I became best of friends. And then when Nick got The Last Starfighter, he was able to bring me on board that project.
And now, what was your inspiration for the main theme for this film? Because it has become an iconic theme, eh?
I guess so, yeah. Well, my idea was that I wanted to somewhat differentiate myself from Star Wars in that tradition, which was what everybody was listening to at that time. And so rather than writing a lot of different themes, I thought, well, If I could find one theme that expressed the humanity of the film, how much we care for the lead character, and if this theme could be used for victory, for adventure, for love, and for yearning and hope in life, if I could get one melody that would work all those ways, that would really be a fun kind of score to write. And so I actually, when I wrote it, I thought of it not as The Last Starfighter. I thought of it as the heart theme, because it was the heart of the movie. And that was my point of view.
Now, the score is a mix between symphonic orchestra and electronic music. How did you record the score? Did you first record the orchestra and afterwards added electronic layers, or did you use keyboards during the recording sessions?
It was done totally live. It was not recorded on multi-track tape at all. We had two keyboard players in with the full orchestra. I didn't want to overdub the electronics. I wanted them to be a real integral part of the texture of the orchestra. That it presented a lot of mixing problems and actually a lot of sync problems, especially on the path on the parts of music where the electronics are playing extremely rhythmic, fast pieces electronically. But we were able to solve those problems, and we did everything live. So the brass was in the room, the percussion, the synthesizers, and then there was a EWI, EWI, electric woodwind instrument that was also it was played by the clarinet player, but it also was running through a synthesizer. And that was also recorded live.
Wow. Now, how did you come up with all these electronic sounds? Because I was listening to the score last week and I noticed one thing. There is a sound that sounds like kind of a stroboscope. You can hear it in the Q hit piece. Now, how did you create that particular sound?
Well, I have worked with electronic music since I was in college. So when I was in college, even though I was an art major, I loved music, and I became fascinated with early electronic music. And that was in the days when everything was plugged in. There were no keyboards. You couldn't tune anything. It was crazy. And it came out of musique concrète, so it came out of more of a classical tradition. And I just got really into how you could make all these sounds and that any sound could be music. So what I did on The Last Starfighter, like the hit piece sound, what I imagined the sound as, sort of metal rushing through. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what I said, but I described it in the score very specifically. And then I spent time with the keyboard players listening to what they came up with. So if I said, okay, this sounds like metal being dragged along the ground rhythmically, but sort of in a scary way, maybe that's all I said. And then their imaginations would trigger and they'd start playing with their instruments till they found these sounds. And then I would listen to the sounds and go, yes, but let's change it here. Let's do this. Let's do that. But every sound was extremely specifically described in the score. I knew because of my experience with electronics, I knew what I wanted. I knew what could be done, and I imagined it in the score. Yeah, the hit beast sound, which I hadn't heard for a long time, and I listened to the other day myself, was really cool. I really liked that sound.
Yeah, my thought exactly. Now, Intrada has released a complete score at the beginning of this year. Now, did you also work on that release?
Only for one day. The credit really goes to Doug Fake and Intrada for getting the rights and finding the original stereo masters. So this CD sounds better than the previous two CDs that have come out over the years, because those CDs were from my composer's copies, which are down a generation and at a slower speed, and so they don't sound quite as good. These sound really exactly like it sounded the day they were recorded. They're just amazingly good sounding. I spent a day helping master the CD, so just listening to the level, seeing if there should be a little bit of compression, that. But it was just one day, so that was my involvement in this.
Now, you've written a lot of scores in the 80s. Now, how many time did you get to write your scores in general? Because nowadays, composers have to deal with very short deadlines.
Well, every film was different. I had films that I had to do in a week, and I've had films that I've had a few months on. So I think every situation is quite different. It is true that when you're working like in The Last Starfighter or Mr. Wrong or Major Payne, where you have big orchestras and a lot of music, you need to work with orchestrators. There's just no physical way that one person could compose it, sketch it, and orchestrate it in, even if you had 2 months, there's no way you could possibly do it. So, part of the challenge is knowing how to sketch music so that all the music comes out sounding of one piece, even though different people have their hands in the actual orchestration.
Okay, now, in your opinion, do you feel that the craft of writing music for film has changed over the years?
Well, I think it definitely has changed. I don't hear melodies much anymore. I mean, now they're, I mean, this is not a criticism, it's just a reality. You don't hear the, you don't hear the big melody. So you might have a wonderful score like to Gravity, but to me, I love the score, but to me, I went, well, I wish there was at least one little melody I could get a chill from, get excited about. And I also, I did like Interstellar quite a bit. I thought that was a nice original take on a space movie. And Hans did a good job. But it's definitely changed. I think unless you have a composer that has a very strong relationship with the director, the composer is often locked in to the temp track. So now, because of of computers, an editor and a director can basically score the entire movie using existing music long before they even have a composer. And then when the composer comes, everyone else on the film is so used to the music they've cut in that the composer's hands are tied. The composer has to do almost the sound alike. And I can't tell you how many times I go to a movie and I go, oh, yeah, I know what the temp track was in that movie. You can all, if you know your film music, you can say, oh, that was that score, The Accidental Tourist. You can literally hear the composer struggling with it. And that didn't exist back in the 80s because there were temp tracks, but they were few and far between and hard to accomplish. And usually they were only on montage scenes where they would take the time to cut in some music.
Now, okay, are you currently working on any projects?
Yes, I have a very exciting project that we just finished mixing Saturday. We're mastering it next week. It's called Rough Magic, and it's my impressions of Paleolithic cave art, so the ancient cave art of France and of northern Spain. I traveled to all those caves, went into them, recorded sounds, recorded the reverbs. It's a project that I've been interested in for many years, and I'm finally doing it. So it's an original piece. It consists of 13 tracks, which in a way describe the life 30,000 years ago. It's coming out on Perseverance Records, which is mostly a film music label, as you know, but their Robin Esterhammer is very excited about releasing this as a special project of my music. It's really, really sounds great. It's a combination of orchestra, lots and lots of recorded samples that I recorded and made into instruments, and then a lot of electronics and voices. It's a very interesting album. Anyway, it'll be out May 5th.
May 5th, okay, something to look forward to. Now, to end the interview, I have some three short questions for you. What's your own favorite score that you've written?
Wow. That's almost impossible to answer. I've written so many. I'll give you my top three.
All right.
The Last Starfighter, Son of the Morning Star, and Stand and Deliver. I think those are my top favorites.
Okay, now what's your favorite score of another composer?
Wow. Well, that is hard to say, but last night That can vary, but last night on television we happened to see To Kill a Mockingbird, and that still is an astounding score. It's so simple. It portrays the theme of the movie, which is seeing evil through the eyes of children. The music just portrays that so beautifully. The theme is gorgeous. It's very simple. Definitely one of my all-time favorite scores.
All right, and who's your favorite composer of all time?
Yikes. I'm not sure, but I think Max Steiner would have to be my Max Steiner, Bernard Herrmann. I mean, there's a handful. More recently, Jerry Goldsmith was fantastic. But I think Max Steiner just created the form of film music in so many ways. I mean, he was the one who recorded, who wrote the music for King Kong, which was one of the very first films that had music specifically written for it. And I had the pleasure, I was, one of my mentors was another Steiner, not related, named Fred Steiner. And he had the original sketches that Max Steiner wrote for King Kong, because he was doing a PhD work on it. And when I was a young composer, we screened King Kong in his house on 16 millimeter film and followed along Max Steiner's score, the sketches, which were on four lines, in his handwriting. And it was just like an eye-opening experience.
Okay, Mr. Safan, thank you very much for the interview.
My pleasure.
I wish you the best of luck with the upcoming project.
Thank you so much. A pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.